I remember when the first signs appeared. Subtle at first, a few withered crops in the eastern quadrants, yield projections dropping by mere percentage points. Nothing alarming for an agricultural world that had fed imperial regiments for centuries. As a cogitator technician monitoring the agricultural output matrices for Hive Crossar, I had access to data most civilians never saw. The numbers told a story long before the administratum admitted the truth. My name is Jarek Varn. I used to believe in the Imperium's infallible systems. I was a fool. The soil degradation reports crossed my cogitator terminal with increasing frequency during those final months of normalcy. Centuries of intensive farming had stripped the land, and the Mechanicus Engineers responsible for maintaining the nutrient cycling systems grew scarce. Their red robes became a rare sight in the agricultural districts as more were reassigned to war efforts in neighboring systems. Those who remained performed perfunctory blessings over faltering machinery rather than actual repairs. I compiled the data dutifully, watching as projected harvests dwindled from 90% of optimal to 70, then 50. The administratum officials who received my reports began to visit less frequently, their faces growing tighter, more guarded with each appearance. When Governor Thale's office announced the first ration cut, calling it a temporary measure to ensure equitable distribution, I already knew what the numbers foretold. My HAB unit in Mid-Hive was modest but comfortable then, with regulated water and power. I had neighbors, families, workers, all servants of the Imperium in their own ways. We believed ourselves essential to the Emperor's great work. The first ration cut reduced our daily caloric intake by 20%. People grumbled but accepted it. The second cut came 3 weeks later, 30% reduction. The propaganda pics showed Governor Thale himself accepting the same rations as any citizen. I knew better. The public executions began in the third month. I witnessed the first from the edge of the main square. A merchant and his entire household staff dragged before the masses, accused of hoarding nutrient packs. The evidence presented by the black uniformed arbitrators amounted to little more than 3 crates of preserved rations, a prudent reserve for any household, nothing more. The law's shots echoed across the square as the bodies slumped forward. Blood pooled on the weathered stone bearing the Imperial Aquila. No one moved to clean it for hours. That night, I accessed restricted data channels using credentials I'd accumulated over years of system maintenance. The astropathic choir had been sending increasingly desperate messages to Sector Command. Their requests for emergency aid went unanswered for weeks, then received the same response. Resources allocated to priority war effort worlds, maintain order and implement austerity measures. I learned that 3 neighboring systems faced similar agricultural collapse. Crossar 7 was deemed non-essential in the broader strategic calculations of the Adeptus Munitorum. We were expendable. The water rationing began next, 2 hours of flow per day, the liquid brown and bitter with chemical treatments. My neighbors grew gaunt, hollow-eyed. The woman across the hall, a Manufactorum shift supervisor with 20 years of service, disappeared after protesting a further reduction in worker rations. The arbitrators claimed she had voluntarily relocated to an outer district. Her quarters were reassigned within days. I maintained my position at the agricultural monitoring station through these early months, watching the graphs trend downward toward inevitable famine. The Mechanicus priests grew increasingly secretive, locking away certain data terminals and restricting access to soil composition reports. I slipped a data slate into my robes one evening, a minor tech heresy that would have earned me servitor conversion in better times. The information confirmed my fears. The soil degradation had passed critical thresholds. Even with proper Mechanicus intervention, recovery would take decades. There would be no recovery. The official Vox casters continued broadcasting messages of resilience and faith. The Emperor protects, the Emperor provides. The hollow words echoed through increasingly empty corridors as people weakened, sickened, died. The Medicaid facilities overflowed, then simply closed their doors. Parchment notices declared them temporarily reassigned to administrative functions. No one believed it. I kept my head down, performed my duties, and hoarded information along with the meager rations I could secure. Each night I returned to my HAB unit, locking the 3 additional bolts I'd installed. The building grew quieter as neighbors disappeared or died. The power grid failed with increasing frequency, plunging whole sections of the hive into darkness for days. The administratum officials retreated to the upper hive levels. Rumors spread that they had secured private food stores, that supply ships landed on restricted platforms with cargoes never distributed to the general population. I could neither confirm nor deny these whispers, but the selective functioning of elevators to the upper levels suggested some truth to them. I lost 15 kilograms in those first 4 months. My uniform hung loose and my belt required new notches. The face in my mirror grew skeletal, my eyes sinking into dark hollows. I was fortunate my technical skills kept me employed longer than most, with access to the marginally better rations allocated to essential personnel. The morning of the Manufactorum District 19 riot marked the true collapse. I was traversing the mid-hive commercial thoroughfare when the emergency sirens blared. The Manufactorum workers, already on half rations despite maintaining production quotas, had finally broken. Thousands stormed the district distribution center after rumors spread that protein shipments were being diverted to the upper hive. I witnessed the response from behind a collapsed market stall. Three Rhino transports disgorged arbitrators in full riot gear, their black armor gleaming under the artificial lighting. They formed a line, shotguns and shock mauls at the ready. The workers surged forward regardless, emaciated bodies propelled by desperate hunger. The arbitrator captain raised his hand, held it there as the crowd approached. I expected warning shots, there were none. The shotguns erupted in unison, tearing through the front ranks of starving laborers. Bodies fell, but those behind pushed forward, howling with rage and hunger. The arbitrators fired again and again. Blood slicked the Manufactorum District's ferrocrete, turning the imperial insignias crimson. Still, the workers came, overwhelming the law enforcers through sheer numbers. I watched an arbitrator fall beneath a wave of skeletal bodies, his shotgun torn from his grasp. Another backed away, firing until his weapon clicked empty, then drew a shock maul that sputtered and died, power cells depleted or damaged. The mob descended upon him. I turned away as they tore at his armor. When I looked back, the riot had moved deeper into the distribution center. Bodies littered the approach, workers and enforcers alike. Among them lay a fallen lasgun, its casing scratched but intact. I had never held a weapon before, never needed to in my ordered, productive life as a loyal imperial citizen. I glanced around, saw no one watching, and darted forward. The lasgun felt heavy, foreign in my hands. I concealed it beneath my tech robes and retreated from the scene before reinforcements arrived. I knew they would come, with heavier weapons and orders to make examples. The weapon represented something final, acknowledgement that the systems I had trusted had failed completely. Back in my HAB unit, I disassembled the lasgun as best I could with my limited knowledge, cleaning it with torn strips of bedding. The charge pack indicated 70% capacity, perhaps 30 shots if used carefully. I wrapped it in cloth and secured it beneath a loose floor panel, then sat on my bunk, trembling. That night, the power failed completely in my section. Through the narrow window, I could see that the upper hive still glowed with illumination. The Vox casters fell silent mid-broadcast, cutting off another hollow assurance from Governor Thale's office. In the sudden silence, I heard screams from distant sections, the occasional crack of gunfire. The water stopped flowing the next day. The pipes produced nothing but a dry rattle when I turned the valve during the designated hours. I had stored some, not enough, but some, in containers beneath my bunk. I measured it by careful sips, calculating survival intervals with the same precision I had once applied to crop yields. The administratum never officially announced the failure of the astropathic petition. I pieced it together through fragmented Vox transmissions intercepted through my cogitator access. The astropaths themselves had begun to die, their psychically attuned bodies requiring more sustenance than was available. The choir's chambers in the spire had fallen silent, no messages out. No messages in, we were alone. A week after the District 19 massacre, I reported to my monitoring station to find the doors sealed with Mechanicus wards. My access codes were invalid. Through the reinforced glass, I could see tech priests disconnecting cogitator stacks, loading essential components onto grav sleds. They were abandoning the agricultural monitoring system entirely. There was nothing left to monitor. The crops had failed. The soil was dead. Crossar 7's purpose within the Imperium had evaporated. I stood there for several minutes, my gaunt frame reflected in the glass before understanding fully settled over me. My position was gone, my ration allowance would cease. My existence, as far as Imperial records were concerned, had become irrelevant. I turned away from the sealed doors and walked through corridors that had once bustled with administrative personnel. Now they stood empty, data slates and parchment scattered across the floor. Through a broken window, I saw distant smoke rising from the lower hive. The enforcers had ceased attempting to maintain even the pretense of order in those depths. The upper hive, though, that remained organized, protected, illuminated. As I made my way back toward my hab block, a new thought formed, terrible in its clarity. If aid would not come from off-world, perhaps resources still existed on Crossar 7 itself, hoarded behind the security systems of the upper levels. I fingered the access card still hanging around my neck. My technical credentials might still open certain doors, certain systems. The lasgun hidden beneath my floor suddenly represented more than mere protection. The Emperor had abandoned Crossar 7, but I was not ready to die. Not yet, not while those who had failed us still ate their fill. I returned to my hab unit as the artificial night cycle dimmed the corridor lumens to a sickly amber glow. The building's environmental systems wheezed and rattled, struggling to maintain even basic life support functions. My footsteps echoed through empty hallways where once hundreds had lived. Most had fled deeper into the hive seeking rumored food caches, or simply died in their rooms, their bodies collected by sanitation servitors that still functioned on ancient, unaltered programming. The door to my quarters slid open with a reluctant groan. Inside, I took stock of my dwindling supplies, 3 nutrient bars, half a container of recycled water, and the lasgun with its precious charge pack. Not enough, never enough. That night, the sounds of organized movement in the corridors below startled me from fitful sleep. Not the shambling gait of starving civilians, but the rhythmic tread of trained personnel. Through a ventilation grill, I glimpsed them, former Planetary Defense Force troopers moving in disciplined formation, their uniforms now stripped of Imperial insignia, replaced with crude markings in what looked like dried blood. They carried an assortment of weapons, las guns, shock mauls, even a few auto guns likely looted from Arbitrator armories. One of them barked orders to his squad, directing them toward the residential block adjacent to mine. I couldn't make out the words, but their purpose became clear moments later when the screams began. Systematic, methodical. They were clearing HAB units one by one, taking anything of value, food, water, medicine, and dealing with resistance in the most final way possible. I spent the next hours reinforcing my door with metal paneling scavenged from abandoned units. The HAB's design, like most Imperial constructions, prioritized function over comfort, with maintenance ducts running between walls and above ceiling panels. During my years maintaining agricultural monitoring systems, I'd studied the hive's infrastructure layouts, knowledge that suddenly transformed from mundane to essential. Using a multi-tool from my tech robes, I removed the ceiling panel above my sleeping alcove, revealing a narrow crawl space that connected to the building's main service shaft. Dust and decay greeted me. These spaces hadn't seen maintenance in months, perhaps years. Perfect. Overlooked spaces meant survival. The PDF gang swept through my level 2 days later. I watched through a pinhole I'd drilled in my reinforced door as they tested each lock, breaking through those that gave even slight resistance. When they reached my quarters, I was already in the ceiling duct, the panel replaced below me, my meager supplies and weapons secured in a pack strapped to my back. One of them struck my door twice with a breaching hammer. The reinforcements held. A brief consultation followed, then they moved on. Resources were too scarce to waste effort on a single well-secured HAB unit when easier targets abounded. I remained motionless in the cramped duct for hours afterward, muscles cramping, afraid even my breathing might betray my position. When I finally emerged, covered in dust and filth, I knew I couldn't stay. The gangs would return with better equipment or explosives. My barricade was a temporary measure at best. The maintenance ducts became my highways through the middle hive levels. I mapped them mentally, identifying junction points, access hatches, and potential bolt holes where I could rest. The ducts carried more than just power conduits and data lines. They whispered the secrets of Crossar's collapse through snippets of conversation and scenes glimpsed through ventilation grills. 5 days after the PDF raid, my supplies exhausted, I ventured from the relative safety of the maintenance network. Intelligence gathered through the ducts suggested an abandoned Administratum ration depot in Sector 17B, 3 levels down. The risk was substantial, but starvation offered no alternatives. I emerged from a service hatch into a corridor showing signs of recent violence. Scorch marks from Law's fire scarred the walls, and dried blood formed intricate patterns across the floor. Following the trail of destruction, I moved cautiously toward the depot, lasgun gripped in trembling hands. The depot's armored doors hung open, one torn completely from its hinges. Inside, emergency lumens cast weak, intermittent light across toppled storage racks and scattered packaging. My first sweep revealed nothing salvageable. Others had stripped the obvious supplies weeks ago. But my years in imperial bureaucracy had taught me one valuable lesson. Administratum officials always maintained hidden reserves. Behind a collapsed section of wall paneling, I discovered a secondary storage area. The security seal had been broken, the contents already disturbed, but what remained inside froze my blood more effectively than any cold. Bodies, administratum officials, identifiable by the tattered remnants of their uniforms. Six of them arranged with a precision that spoke of purpose rather than rage. Each corpse had been systematically butchered, with surgical incisions across the abdomen, chest, and thighs. Organs had been removed with careful precision, not the work of frenzied rioters, but calculated harvesting. The sight triggered my gag reflex, but my empty stomach produced nothing but bile. As I wiped my mouth, I noticed details that told a darker story. The wounds showed different stages of healing. These officials hadn't been killed simultaneously. They'd been kept alive as their bodies were harvested piece by piece. More disturbing were the tools arranged on a nearby workbench, Medicaid scalpels, bone saws, tissue separators, all bearing the insignia of Crossar's primary Medicaid facility. This wasn't opportunistic cannibalism born of desperation. This was organized, systematic utilization of human resources. My search of the remaining storage compartments yielded a single overlooked ration pack and a half-empty canteen of chemical purified water. I secured these treasures in my pack and retreated toward the maintenance ducts, unable to shake the clinical horror of what I'd witnessed. The route back to my temporary shelter took me through a section of the hive I'd previously avoided, the Medicaid district. Once a place of healing, now its function had grotesquely inverted. Through ventilation grills, I observed former Medicaid facilities repurposed into processing centers. What they processed became horrifyingly clear as I watched. A woman in a stained Medicaid uniform moved between gurneys bearing immobilized forms. Her movements displayed professional efficiency as she checked intravenous lines running from the victims into collection containers. Not blood being collected, other fluids harvested from still living donors, protein extraction. The most efficient use of available human resources. I recognized her from propaganda pics that once adorned the Medicaid facility entrances, Drusilla Varn, no relation, chief xenobiological containment specialist. Her expertise had been adapting human physiology to hostile environments. Now she applied that knowledge to extract maximum nutritional value from her fellow citizens. Movement at the facility entrance forced me to retreat deeper into the duct, but not before I observed a delegation from the upper hive, their clothing still relatively clean, bodies not yet emaciated, exchanging data slates with Drusilla. One gestured toward the collection containers, another made notations. A transaction. The upper spires had sealed themselves off. This much was obvious from the still functioning lumens visible in the heights of the hive. What I hadn't realized was their active role in managing the collapse below. They weren't merely hoarding resources, they were farming them from the population they'd abandoned. I followed the upper hive delegation at a distance through the ducts. Their path took them to a water purification substation, one of the few still operational in the mid-hive. Inside, they met with maintenance personnel who delivered a report I couldn't hear. The delegation's leader examined readouts on a monitoring station, made adjustments, then handed over small packages to the workers, payment for services rendered. As the delegation departed, I risked moving closer to the monitoring station. The readouts confirmed what I'd suspected. The water systems weren't failing from neglect. They were being systematically degraded through controlled introduction of contaminants. The nobility maintained control of the remaining resources by regulating their scarcity. I retreated into the ducts as the maintenance workers began their next task, adjusting valves to reduce flow to specific sectors while maintaining supply to others. The pattern was clear. Areas housing potential resources received minimum life-sustaining water, while processing centers like Drusilla's received priority. My return journey through the maintenance network was interrupted by unusual sounds echoing through the metal passages, rhythmic thumping accompanied by discordant humming. I approached cautiously, following the noise to a ventilation grill overlooking what had once been a communal food hall. The sight below defied rational explanation. 2 dozen figures moved in slow procession around the hall's central columns. Each wore flayed skins draped over their shoulders, the distinctive uniforms of administratum officials, still bearing rank insignia and identification markers. The wearers themselves appeared to be former Manufactorum workers, their bodies marked with the distinctive implant ports used for interface with industrial machinery. They carried makeshift weapons fashioned from manufacturing tools, pneumatic hammers, industrial cutters, arc welders converted to crude flamers. More disturbing were the trophies hanging from their belts, desiccated hands still clutching data slates or styluses, the fingers locked in rigor. I shifted position for a better view, dislodging a small fragment of corroded metal that fell through the grill. The sound, barely audible to my ears, caused every head below to snap upward in unison. Their movements changed instantly from shambling to predatory. 2 bounded toward the walls with inhuman agility, seeking access to the maintenance areas. I retreated rapidly, abandoning stealth for speed. Behind me, metal groaned as ventilation covers were torn free. The workers had entered the duct network. Their familiarity with the Manufactorum systems would translate to knowledge of maintenance pathways. My advantage was evaporating. At a junction, I chose a narrow secondary duct that my pursuers' broader frames might struggle to navigate. The passage constricted further, forcing me to discard my pack to continue. The lasgun I kept, though its bulk made progress difficult through the tightening space. The sounds of pursuit faded, then ceased entirely. I paused, controlling my breathing, listening for any indication they had found an alternate route. Nothing but the distant groaning of the hive's deteriorating infrastructure. Hours passed before I dared emerge from the ducts, dropping into an abandoned storage compartment several sectors removed from my original shelter. My survival strategy, such as it was, had been rendered obsolete in a single day. The maintenance ducts were no longer a safe haven. The organized gangs, the systematic harvesting operations, the feral workers, all represented threats I hadn't anticipated. The hive's social collapse was accelerating beyond any projection I might have calculated in my former life. The thin veneer of imperial civilization had not merely cracked. It had been methodically stripped away to reveal the brutal calculus beneath. We had never been citizens. We had always been resources, our value measured in output, our lives expendable when that output faltered. I huddled in the corner of the storage compartment, the lasgun across my knees, and contemplated my dwindling options. The upper hive maintained its isolation, controlling the remaining functional systems. The middle levels had devolved into competing harvesting operations. The lower hive remained an unknown, but rumors suggested conditions there had deteriorated even further. My technical knowledge, once my value to the Imperium, now represented my only advantage in a hive where human worth was measured in caloric content. If the nobility controlled the systems, perhaps those systems could be turned against them. If water flow was their method of control, perhaps that control could be disrupted. The lasgun's charge pack indicator glowed at 65% capacity. 26 shots, approximately. Not enough for prolonged combat, but perhaps sufficient for a more targeted application. The thought crystallized as I examined the service markings on the storage compartment walls. I was 3 levels above a primary water distribution hub, if I could access the control systems. I closed my eyes, visualizing the infrastructure diagrams I'd studied during my years of service. The nobility had sealed themselves away, using the hive systems as their instruments of control. They had forgotten that those same systems required maintenance, required access points, required vulnerabilities. They had forgotten that some of us understood how the machinery of Imperial society functioned, how it could be dismantled, how it could be weaponized. I checked the action on the lasgun, confirming its readiness. The hunger that had been my constant companion these past months transformed into something sharper, more focused. The Imperium had abandoned Crossar 7, but the human capacity for adaptation, for survival at any cost, remained. The nobility of the upper hive would soon discover that the flesh of the Imperium, once turned upon itself, recognized no distinction of rank. The abandoned Arbites precinct loomed before me, its once imposing facade now a mockery of Imperial justice. Blast marks scarred the ferrocrete walls, and the Imperial Aquila above the entrance had been defaced, its wings broken and head removed. In its place hung a crude symbol painted in what appeared to be dried blood, a simple circle with a line through it, the mark of the providers. 3 weeks had passed since my discovery in the Medicaid district. My infected leg wound throbbed with each step as I approached the precinct from the shadows of a collapsed hab stack. The injury, a deep gash from a rusted support beam during my escape from the water distribution hub, had festered despite my attempts to clean it with my dwindling water supply. Fever came in waves, clouding my thoughts before receding temporarily. During those moments of clarity, I planned. The providers had emerged as the dominant faction in this sector of the mid-hive. Former arbitrators, PDF officers, and administratum enforcers had banded together, leveraging their training and access to establish control over the remaining population. Unlike the feral manufactorum workers or the clinical harvesting operations I'd witnessed, the providers maintained a veneer of civilization, a system, a process, a method to their brutality. I tracked their movements for days, observing their patrols through ventilation ducts and maintenance crawlways. Their discipline was impressive given the circumstances. They maintained regular schedules, controlled key intersections, and operated with tactical precision that spoke of military training. Most concerning was their apparent abundance of supplies. Their members, while gaunt, showed none of the extreme emaciation afflicting the general population. The source of those supplies had become evident during my reconnaissance. Twice weekly, the providers conducted collection operations, sweeping through designated sectors to round up survivors. Those captured never returned to general circulation. Instead, they entered the former RBT's precinct, now the provider's headquarters and operations center. I approached the structure from its eastern aspect, where a waste disposal conduit had been damaged during the initial riots. The breach was small, barely large enough for my emaciated frame to squeeze through, but it provided access to the building's lower levels. My tech robes, once a symbol of my station, were now tattered rags caked with the filth of survival. They offered little protection against the jagged edges of the broken conduit, which tore fresh wounds across my arms and chest as I forced my way inside. The precinct's lower level housed the former detention blocks, now repurposed in ways that confirmed my darkest suspicions. The cells contained huddled masses of captured civilians, sorted by an obscene calculus of physical condition. Those with more flesh on their bones occupied cells closer to the processing area. The emaciated were kept furthest away, sustained on minimal water rations until those in better condition were depleted. I navigated through maintenance accessways, careful to avoid the regular patrols. My destination was the operations center on the third level, where the providers coordinated their activities and, more importantly, maintained the precinct's Vox system. If any record of what had truly happened to Crossar 7 existed, it would be there. The fever returned as I climbed a maintenance ladder, forcing me to pause every few rungs as waves of dizziness threatened to dislodge my grip. The infected wound leaked a foul-smelling fluid that had soaked through my makeshift bandage. Emperor's mercy, but there would be none here. I continued upward, each movement sending fresh pain through my deteriorating body. The third level presented a stark contrast to the detention blocks below, clean, orderly, with functioning lumens and even climate control. The providers maintained comfort for themselves while the population starved. Through a ventilation grill, I observed a gathering in what had once been the precinct's main briefing hall. A raised platform dominated the center of the room, surrounded by 24 provider officers in various states of modified RBTs and PDF uniforms. Upon the platform stood 5 civilians, 3 men and 2 women, restrained with shock cuffs and displaying visible signs of recent feeding. Their bodies, while thin, lacked the extreme wasting visible throughout the hive. These were not random captures. A provider officer paced before the platform, gesturing toward the captives while addressing the assembled group. From my position, I couldn't hear his words clearly, but the context became apparent as officers began raising hands, calling out numbers, an auction, not for goods or supplies, but for human livestock. Each captive was presented individually, turned to display their physical condition. Muscle mass was prodded, teeth were checked, as one might examine a grox at market. The bidding proceeded methodically, with successful bidders marking their purchases with colored tags attached to the captive's restraints. I forced myself to watch, to witness the full extent of our collapse. These weren't the actions of desperate, starving civilians. This was systematic, organized predation, the strong feeding upon the weak with bureaucratic efficiency. The Imperium's structures of control had not disappeared, they had merely shifted purpose. When the auction concluded, the merchandise was led away to holding areas for collection. The gathering dispersed, officers returning to their duties. I waited until the hall emptied before continuing toward the communications center. The Vox operations room occupied a small chamber adjacent to the precinct commander's former office. Inside, ancient equipment hummed with steady power, a luxury unimaginable in most of the hive. A single operator monitored the systems, cycling through frequencies with practiced movements. I observed him through the ventilation grill for nearly an hour, memorizing his patterns. Every 20 minutes, he performed a sweep of specific frequencies, logging activity in a data slate. Every 40 minutes, he left his post for approximately 3 minutes, presumably for biological functions. My window would be narrow. When he departed for his third break, I dropped from the ventilation shaft, landing awkwardly as my injured leg nearly buckled beneath me. The pain sent black spots dancing across my vision, but I forced myself forward to the control console. The system was more sophisticated than I'd anticipated, but my technical background provided sufficient understanding to navigate its basic functions. I accessed the message logs, scanning quickly for any communication with off-world authorities. Most were local transmissions between provider outposts, but a subfolder marked with the governor's seal contained what I sought. The messages revealed the truth in stark, unforgiving terms. 3 months before the public announcement of rationing, Governor Thale had received warning from the Administratum that Crossar 7's agricultural output had fallen below acceptable thresholds. No aid would be forthcoming. The planet was deemed resource negative and slated for population adjustment until productivity could be restored. Governor Thale's response was not to implement gradual conservation measures or seek alternative food sources. Instead, he initiated protocol severance, the systematic abandonment of the general population while preserving the administrative class and essential personnel. The final transmission log entry, dated nearly 2 months ago, confirmed what I had suspected but couldn't prove. The last supply shuttle had departed Crossar 7 carrying Governor Thale, his staff, and selected high-value personnel. Their destination, Sector Command, where they would oversee recovery operations from a safe distance. They had never intended to save us. The rationing, the public executions, the propaganda, all were theater to maintain order while the elite secured their escape. We had been abandoned not through oversight or prioritization of war efforts, but by calculated design. As I processed this revelation, a coded transmission activated the Vox unit. I instinctively ducked behind the console as the message played through the system speakers. The transmission originated from a location identified as Reclamation Facility Primus, the water processing plant in the industrial sector. The speaker identified himself as Captain Herrick, former PDF commander, now self-styled Lord of the Water Supply. Herrick's message detailed his latest harvest quota and requested additional labor for the reclamation pumps. His casual reference to processing the exhausted stock confirmed rumors I'd heard about his operation. The water still flowing to certain sectors came at the cost of slave labor, worked to death at the pumps before being rendered into protein supplement for Herrick's forces. The Vox operator's returning footsteps forced me to abandon further investigation. I retreated toward the ventilation shaft, but my weakened condition slowed my movements. As I pulled myself into the duct, my injured leg scraped against the metal edge, tearing the wound further. I couldn't suppress a gasp of pain. The operator's shout of alarm triggered an immediate response. Security protocols activated, sealing the level's access points. I crawled desperately through the ventilation system as boots thundered through the corridors below. My progress was hampered by increasingly frequent waves of fever and the blood now flowing freely from my reopened wound. At a junction between ventilation shafts, I misjudged my weight distribution. The corroded metal gave way beneath me, sending me crashing through to the level below, landing hard on the corridor floor. Pain exploded through my body as my infected leg twisted beneath me. The lasgun clattered away, sliding across the polished floor. Before I could recover, provider enforcers surrounded me, shock mauls raised. Their leader stepped forward, examining my tech robes with a calculating gaze. He recognized their significance, understanding that I possessed knowledge potentially valuable to their operation. Instead of an immediate execution, I received a shock maul strike to the temple that plunged me into unconsciousness. I awoke strapped to a metal table in what had once been the precinct's Medicay Bay. Medical equipment had been repurposed for less benevolent functions, with fluid collection apparatus positioned around the table. A figure in stained Medicay robes examined my infected leg, probing the wound with gloved fingers. The pain jolted me fully conscious, a scream building in my throat but emerging as only a dry rasp. The Medicay noticed my consciousness and stepped back, making notations on a data slate. Two provider guards entered, releasing my restraints only to secure my wrists with shock cuffs. They hauled me upright, ignoring my inability to support weight on my injured leg. The resulting agony nearly returned me to unconsciousness, but a stim injection from the Medicay forced alertness upon me. They dragged me through corridors and down stairwells, eventually emerging into the precinct's vehicle bay. A transport waited, its rear compartment already containing a dozen similarly restrained captives. I was thrown in among them, my body colliding with others too weak to cushion my fall. The doors slammed shut, plunging us into darkness broken only by thin shafts of light from ventilation slits. The journey lasted approximately 30 minutes, the transport's route taking us deeper into the industrial sector. When the doors finally opened, the stench of chemical processing and decomposing organic matter assaulted my senses. We had arrived at Reclamation Facility Primus, Herrick's domain. Guards pulled us from the transport, organizing us into lines based on apparent physical condition. My technical robes again set me apart, causing one guard to mark my restraints with a different colored tag than the others. I was separated from the main group and led through a series of security checkpoints into the facility's control center. Captain Herrick bore little resemblance to the PDF officer he had once been. His uniform remained, adorned now with trophies taken from his victims, finger bones strung together as decorative chains, teeth embedded in the fabric of his epaulets. His face, once presumably disciplined and professional, had transformed into a mask of calculated cruelty. He assessed me with the detached interest of a man examining a potentially useful tool. My technical background proved both salvation and curse. Instead of immediate processing, I was assigned to maintenance duties, repairing control systems for the reclamation pumps. The facility's original tech priests had either fled or been processed, leaving critical systems without proper maintenance. My knowledge extended my utility, and therefore my life, but exposed me to the full horror of Herrick's operation. The reclamation facility processed more than water. Human remains were systematically rendered, the resulting organic material separated into components for various uses. Protein, fats, bone meal, all harvested with industrial efficiency. The workers operating the pumps received minimal sustenance, enough to maintain function until exhaustion claimed them, at which point they joined the processing queue. For 3 days, I repaired systems by day and witnessed atrocities by night. My infected leg received rudimentary treatment, enough to prevent immediate sepsis but insufficient for proper healing. The stim injections continued, forcing my body to function despite deteriorating conditions. Each night I plotted escape, memorizing patrol patterns and security protocols. On the fourth day, as I worked on a filtration control panel, alarms blared throughout the facility. Through observation ports, I witnessed a coordinated attack on the perimeter. A rival faction bearing the flayed skin markings I'd observed weeks earlier had launched an assault on Herrick's operation. Their objective appeared to be the water supply itself rather than territory. The resulting chaos provided opportunity. As guards rushed to defensive positions, I accessed an emergency override panel and initiated a purge sequence in the filtration system. Caustic chemicals intended for cleaning the filters flooded the main processing chamber, triggering secondary alarms and forcing evacuation of key areas. In the confusion, I located an access panel leading to maintenance ducts beneath the facility. As I pried it open, a stray round from the ongoing firefight struck a nearby pressure valve. The resulting explosion of steam caught me across the torso and left arm, searing flesh and sending me tumbling into the access shaft. I landed hard, the impact reopening my leg wound and adding fresh injuries to my catalog of suffering. The maintenance tunnel stretched before me, dark save for emergency lumens that flickered erratically. Behind me, the sounds of battle intensified as Herrick's forces engaged the invaders. I crawled forward, each movement an exercise in agony, leaving a trail of blood and burned tissue on the tunnel floor. After what seemed like hours, I emerged through a drainage outlet at the facility's periphery. The night cycle was in full effect, providing cover as I dragged myself away from the ongoing conflict. My consciousness faded in and out, the stims in my system finally depleted, allowing the full impact of my injuries to manifest. I reached the relative shelter of a collapsed storage structure before my body finally surrendered to its limitations. Fever consumed me, the infection from my leg wound now spreading throughout my system. In moments of lucidity, I examined the burns covering my arm and chest, third degree in places, the flesh blackened and insensate. As darkness claimed me again, I understood that I had escaped one horror only to face another. The Underhive beckoned, its depths promising new terrors for those desperate enough to seek refuge there. But it also offered something the mid-levels no longer could, anonymity, the chance to disappear among the forgotten rather than be harvested by the remembered. The knowledge I had gained weighed heavier than my physical injuries. We had not merely been abandoned by the Imperium. We had been sacrificed, designated as acceptable losses in calculations made by men who had already secured their own survival. The systems meant to protect us had been weaponized against us, turned to methodical extraction of final value from those deemed expendable. As consciousness slipped away, I clutched the data slate I had managed to steal from the communications center. It contained proof of our betrayal, though who remained to care about such evidence I couldn't say. Perhaps no one. Perhaps the only remaining purpose was to document our end, to ensure that the death of Crossar 7 would not pass unmarked into the void of Imperial records. The Underhive waited below, its depths promising either death or a new form of existence beyond Imperial accounting. I had no choice but to descend further, away from the organized predation of the mid-levels, into the anarchic struggle of those who had already accepted their abandonment. I woke to the sound of distant explosions, my body shivering despite the fever burning through me. My vision swam as I tried to focus on my surroundings. The Underhive maintenance tunnel I'd collapsed in hours, or perhaps days, earlier had become my temporary sanctuary. The infection in my leg had worsened, angry red lines now tracking up toward my groin. The burns across my chest and arm had begun to weep clear fluid, the skin pulling tight and cracking when I moved. My tongue felt swollen in my parched mouth. Water, I needed water. The irony wasn't lost on me, having escaped Herrick's water reclamation facility only to face dehydration in the Underhive. I fumbled through my tattered tech robes, fingers finding the small canteen I'd managed to steal during my escape. A single mouthful remained, barely enough to wet my lips. I rationed half, saving the remainder for what would likely be my final hours. The fever made movement excruciating, but remaining stationary meant certain death. I forced myself upright, using the corroded pipe running along the tunnel wall for support. My infected leg buckled immediately, forcing me to hop awkwardly while dragging the useless limb behind me. Each movement sent fresh waves of agony through my body, but the alternative, waiting for death in this forgotten passage, seemed somehow worse than the pain of continuing. The tunnel gradually widened, eventually opening into what had once been a storage depot for industrial chemicals. Ancient containers lined the walls, their hazard markings faded to near invisibility. The air carried a metallic tang that burned my lungs with each labored breath. At the far end, a security door hung partially open, its locking mechanism long since failed. Beyond the door lay a section of the Underhive I'd never seen referenced in any official documentation. The space stretched impossibly wide, illuminated by the sickly green glow of bioluminescent fungi growing along moisture-slick walls. Makeshift structures had been erected throughout the cavernous chamber, constructed from salvaged materials, HAB unit panels, industrial piping, even fragments of what appeared to be a downed shuttle craft. No inhabitants were visible, though signs of recent occupation surrounded me, cold cooking fires, discarded nutrient packaging, drag marks in the accumulated filth of the floor. The population had either perished or relocated deeper into the Underhive's labyrinthine depths. I limped forward searching for anything that might extend my rapidly diminishing lifespan. The structures yielded nothing but emptiness. Whatever supplies they might have contained had been stripped by their former occupants. My strength waned with each step, the stims that had kept me functioning now completely purged from my system. A distant mechanical hum drew my attention. Following the sound through winding passages between the makeshift dwellings, I discovered something unexpected, a functional service elevator. Its doors stood partially open, revealing an interior illuminated by emergency lighting. The control panel flickered with active power, a miracle in this abandoned realm. I hesitated before the elevator, suspicion warring with desperation. Functional technology in the Underhive represented either salvation or trap. In my condition, the distinction hardly mattered. I squeezed through the gap between the doors, collapsing against the rear wall as my leg finally gave out completely. The control panel offered limited options. Only two destinations remained functional: the current level and another marked with the Adeptus Mechanicus cogwheel insignia. I pressed the latter, reasoning that Mechanicus facilities might contain medical supplies or at least clean water. The doors shuddered closed and the elevator began its ascent with a groan of protesting machinery. The journey lasted perhaps 5 minutes, though fever made time measurement unreliable. When the doors opened, I found myself in a corridor bearing the unmistakable aesthetics of Mechanicus construction, angular utilitarian, with data conduits lining the walls and ceiling. The air smelled clean, filtered, lacking the rot and decay that permeated the rest of the hive. I dragged myself from the elevator, leaving smears of blood and pus on the polished floor. The corridor stretched ahead, branching at regular intervals. Lumens activated automatically as I progressed, responding to motion sensors still functioning after months of abandonment. The facility appeared untouched by the violence that had consumed the upper levels. No signs of forced entry, no battle damage, no bloodstains. At the corridor's end stood a massive bulkhead door bearing the symbol of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Its control panel glowed with active power. I pressed my palm against the scanner, expecting rejection. To my shock, the panel chimed affirmatively and the bulkhead began to slide open. My tech designation must have retained sufficient authorization to grant basic access. Beyond the bulkhead lay a technological miracle, a fully functional Mechanicus storage facility. Rows of equipment stood in perfect order, preservation fields humming around more delicate components. In the center of the chamber, moisture collectors extracted humidity from the air, condensing it into purified water that flowed into collection tanks. Adjacent to these stood protein synthesizers, their display panels indicating standby status. I stumbled toward the water tanks, desperation overriding caution. The control panel required authentication I didn't possess, but the overflow drain yielded enough moisture to wet my parched lips. The relief was momentary but profound. The protein synthesizers represented potential salvation, machines designed to convert base organic matter into edible protein. With functioning units, starvation could be avoided indefinitely. I examined the control interfaces, recognizing the basic command structure from my technical training, but access required Mechanicus authorization codes and proper ritual sequences. My knowledge extended to monitoring agricultural systems, not operating sacred Mechanicus technology. Without a tech priest to perform the proper rites, the machines remained tantalizingly inert. I searched the facility for anything immediately useful: medical supplies, ration packs, portable water purifiers. A small medical station yielded basic disinfectants and bandages, enough to clean my wounds, but insufficient to combat the systemic infection now ravaging my body. No antibiotics, no surgical tools, no servitors programmed for medical intervention. The cruel irony crushed what remained of my hope. Surrounded by technology that could sustain thousands, I would starve to death unable to activate any of it. The Mechanicus had sealed their treasures behind rituals and codes, ensuring that only the properly ordained could access the Emperor's bounty. As I slumped against a collection tank, the facility's Vox system suddenly activated. A transmission, directed to emergency frequencies, echoed through the chamber. I recognized the voice immediately: Prefect Dominic Valthorn, Senior Administratum Official and Governor Thale's right hand. His words confirmed my worst suspicions about Crossar 7's abandonment. Valthorn explained that relief ships had indeed arrived in orbit months ago, responding to the astropathic distress calls. However, upon reviewing planetary tithe assessments and productivity projections, Sector Command had made a calculated decision. CrossR7's agricultural output had fallen below sustainable levels. The cost of recovery, of importing sufficient nutrients to restore soil viability, replacing failed machinery, and sustaining the population through the recovery period, exceeded the projected return on investment. The cold economic reality of the Imperium had sealed our fate. Resources had been diverted to a nearby forge world deemed more valuable to the war effort. CrossR7 had been classified as economically non-viable for recovery. The relief ships had delivered their supplies elsewhere, leaving us to our slow, agonizing death. Valthorn's transmission continued, revealing that he had remained behind when Governor Thale and the other senior officials evacuated. His purpose had been to coordinate an orderly dissolution of Imperial authority and manage the inevitable population reduction. The rapid collapse of social order had forced him into hiding within the Upper Spire districts, where he had maintained observer status, documenting the final days of CrossR7 for Imperial records. The transmission ended with coordinates for his current location and a request for extraction, though who might receive such a message remained unclear. Perhaps automated Imperial systems still monitored emergency channels. Perhaps he simply shouted into the void, hoping someone might record our passing. I pushed myself upright, new determination fueling my movements. If Valthorn remained in the upper spires, he might possess the authorization codes needed to activate the Mechanica systems. More importantly, he represented the last vestige of the administration that had abandoned us to starvation. My technical knowledge meant nothing now, only survival mattered, and perhaps a final accounting. The journey to the upper spires proved arduous beyond description. My infected leg had become completely useless, forcing me to fashion a crude crutch from piping found in the Mechanicus facility. The fever worsened, sending me into periods of delirium where I conversed with ghosts of former colleagues, arguing about crop yield projections while wading through corridors filled with imaginary nutrient slurry. I traversed maintenance shafts, service elevators, and emergency stairwells, avoiding the main thoroughfares where gangs still hunted for flesh. The upper levels showed signs of recent violence. The organized predation of the providers had given way to something more primal as food sources dwindled. Former nobles, once protected by their status and private security forces, had been dragged into the streets and butchered. Their remains displayed evidence of careful processing. The techniques pioneered in the reclamation facilities had spread throughout the population. Vox hailers still functioned in these districts, broadcasting automated prayers to the Emperor that echoed through empty corridors. The mechanical devotions continued unabated, praising the master of mankind while his subjects devoured each other in his name. No response came from the heavens, no salvation for the faithful, only silence and hunger. Valthorn's coordinates led to a private residence in the highest spire, a luxurious dwelling once belonging to the planetary trade representative. Security systems remained active, but like the Mechanicus facility, my technical credentials granted basic access. The main entrance opened at my approach, revealing an interior that defied the reality of CrossR7's collapse. Clean, well-lit chambers extended before me, environmental systems maintaining perfect temperature and humidity. Furniture remained in pristine condition, untouched by the desperation that had transformed the rest of the hive into a charnel house. The contrast with my own condition, emaciated, burned, infected, dragging myself forward on a makeshift crutch, could not have been more stark. I found Prefect Valthorn in the residence's main study, seated before a functioning cogitator array. Unlike the imagined scene of privilege I had anticipated, Valthorn's appearance shocked me. His body had wasted to near skeletal proportions, cheeks sunken, eyes recessed into dark hollows. He wore his administratum uniform, now several sizes too large, the fabric hanging from his frame like decorative drapery on a statue. He noticed my presence immediately, showing no surprise at my intrusion. His eyes registered recognition, not of me personally, but of my technical designation visible on the tattered remains of my robes. He gestured toward a chair opposite his position, an absurd formality given the circumstances. Valthorn explained the full truth without prompting. The agricultural collapse had been predicted years earlier by Mechanica soil analysts, but recovery measures required diversion of resources from military production. The decision to allow CrossR7's failure had been made at sector level, part of a broader strategic reassessment that classified certain worlds as expendable. The rationing, the public executions, the propaganda, all had been theater, designed to maintain order during the planned reduction of non-essential population. Essential personnel had been evacuated months ago, leaving only those deemed economically non-viable to face starvation. The process should have been gradual, managed, documented for future reference on similar worlds facing agricultural collapse. What hadn't been anticipated was the speed of social degradation once the truth became apparent. The carefully planned dissolution had become an uncontrolled collapse into cannibalism and factional warfare. Valthorn had remained to document the process, transmitting regular reports via a secure Vox channel to an orbiting automated monitoring station. His own supplies had been exhausted weeks ago. He had survived on increasingly small portions of nutrient paste, stretching his rations beyond sustainable levels. The emaciation of his body testified to his failing strategy. He had perhaps days remaining before his system shut down completely. Most shocking was his revelation about the Mechanicus facility I had discovered. Similar installations existed throughout the hive, containing technology that could have sustained the population through the agricultural collapse. Their locations had been deliberately omitted from public records, their existence known only to the highest levels of planetary administration. The decision to withhold this information had been made to ensure the population reduction proceeded according to schedule. As Valthorn spoke, distant explosions shook the spire. Through the study's armored viewing ports, I witnessed the organized assault on the upper levels. The gangs had finally breached the security systems protecting the last bastions of privilege. Figures moved through the streets below, carrying improvised weapons and processing tools. The final dissolution of Imperial society played out before us, former nobles dragged screaming from their residences, summary execution of household staff, methodical division of corpses for maximum utilization. Valthorn seemed oddly detached from the violence, viewing it as the logical conclusion to a process set in motion by administrative decision. His only concern appeared to be completing his final report before the inevitable breach of his sanctuary. The cogitator before him displayed page after page of clinical observations on social collapse patterns, resource competition strategies, and population reduction metrics. As I watched him catalog the death of our world with bureaucratic precision, something broke within me. The technical rationality that had defined my existence as an Imperial servant evaporated, replaced by a clarity I had never before experienced. The Imperium was not civilization preserving humanity against the darkness. It was the darkness itself, consuming its own children when their productivity faltered. Before I could act on this revelation, Valthorn's cogitator chimed with an incoming transmission. The message was brief, encoded in standard Imperial military format. Orbital bombardment had been authorized for Crossar 7. The world had been classified as irredeemably lost to starvation madness. Cleansing would commence within hours, eradicating all evidence of the failed experiment in managed population reduction. Valthorn received this news with the same detachment he had displayed toward the violence below. He merely added the information to his report, noting the time and authorization codes with meticulous attention to detail. His duty would be complete when the first bombardment shells breached the atmosphere. The monitoring station would record his final transmission, then disengage to a safe distance before the planetary cleansing began. I noticed an emergency Vox transmitter on a side table, a high-powered unit capable of broadcasting to orbiting vessels. My technical knowledge confirmed its functionality. While Valthorn continued his documentation, I activated the device, setting it to record and transmit on all emergency frequencies. Into this final testament, I poured the truth of Crossar 7's abandonment, the predicted agricultural collapse. Deliberate withholding of Mechanicus technology that could have saved millions. The calculated decision to allow starvation rather than divert resources from military production. The classified reports documenting our suffering as a case study in population management. The final solution of orbital bombardment to erase evidence of Imperial failure. As I completed my testimony, the first bombardment shells became visible through the viewing port, bright streaks descending through the upper atmosphere. Valthorn watched them with an expression approaching satisfaction, his duty to document our extinction nearly complete. I activated the transmission sequence, sending my final report to any vessel, any station, any receiver that might preserve the truth. The probability of interception seemed minimal, the likelihood of anyone caring even less. Yet in that moment, bearing witness became the only meaningful act remaining to me. The Vox transmitter confirmed successful broadcast as the first impacts shook the foundations of the Hive. The upper spires began to crumble, luxury residences collapsing into the levels below. Through the viewing port, I watched the methodical destruction of Crossar 7, each impact precisely targeted to ensure maximum coverage. In those final moments, as the bombardment approached our position, I understood the true horror of the Imperium, not the Xenos' threats that stalked the void. Not the warp entities that hungered for our souls. The true horror was the cold calculation that reduced human lives to production units, expendable when their output no longer justified their consumption. The ceiling collapsed as a direct hit struck the spire above us. Valthorn disappeared beneath falling debris, his final report incomplete. The viewing port shattered, admitting the howling winds of atmosphere being systematically scoured of life. I clutched the Vox transmitter, continuing my testimony even as the room disintegrated around me. My last sight was of Imperial Navy vessels visible through the atmosphere, methodically executing the cleansing protocol with mechanical precision. In their wake, nothing would remain of Crossar 7's population, no evidence of the starvation, the cannibalism, the deliberate abandonment. Official records would list the world as lost to unspecified contamination, its recovery deemed economically unfeasible. As the final walls collapsed around me, I understood that my death, our deaths, were not merely the result of agricultural failure or resource scarcity. We died because our lives were worth less than the ammunition being used to erase us. In the calculus of the Imperium, we had become the ultimate expression of expendability, a population whose death was more efficient than their salvation. The last ration on Crossar 7 was not of food, but of truth, and like all precious commodities in the dying hive, it would be consumed and forgotten, leaving nothing but silence in its wake.